Hey guys, how's it going? Welcome to this episode of Walther Radio. Today we're going to be talking to Caleb Quanbeck. It's going to be awesome, so stick around.
Guns, gear, and training tips from the best instructors around the world. Walther Arms presents Walther Radio.
Hey guys, how's it going? My name is Chris with Walther. Welcome to this episode of Walther Radio. It's going to be an awesome show. We're going to talk to a good friend of ours, Caleb Quanbeck. Before we do that, let's talk about a little bit of Walther news. Got some really cool events coming up and that we have gone to that we haven't got to really tell you about too much within the last month. We did Girl and a Gun. We got to sponsor the NRA World Shooting Championship down at Camp Atterbury in Indiana. That was really cool. We actually had some Walther guys do really well at that event. Jens Krobe, who works at Walther as our VP of Product Development and Marketing, took 8th place over some pretty lofty names on the list there. So that was pretty cool. Beyond that, this episode, just like all other episodes of the Walther Radio podcast, is brought to you by the Walther 30-Day Money-Back Guarantee, which says that you can buy just about any Walther that you want, be it the steel frame, the F-Series, steel frame match, polymer match, PPK. Any of our best and really some of our most popular guns are available on the 30-Day Money-Back Guarantee. If you buy it, you can shoot 1,000,000 rounds through it in up to 30 days. If you decide you don't like it for any reason whatsoever, you can just send that back to us. We will refund 100% of your purchase price. We will refund the tax that you paid on that, and we'll also send you a shipping label. So you're really not out anything other than your time for the Walther 30-Day Money-Back Guarantee. That's what it is. We think it's the best guarantee in the industry. Moving right along to our guest, he is a professional BMX rider. He is a Second Amendment advocate as well as a firearms instructor, and he is currently the driver of the Walther Arms drift car. Caleb Quanbeck, how are you doing today, sir?
Dude, that was a lot. You really nailed that intro.
Thank you so much.
I don't know if you're going to get enough credit in the comments about that intro. You did a great job. I am doing good, staying busy. And, you know, it's a beautiful day here in Kentucky. And why not be inside and jump on a podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. You're down there by the Buc-ee's. You got your own, like, personal Buc-ee's there just down the road. That's one of my favorite things about your house. Pretty cool.
You can fly a drone to Buc-ee's and pick up a brisket sandwich and fly it home.
You sound like you know that, like from personal experience.
If I just had a good contact.
If you had a good contact where? At Buc-ee's?
Yeah, they could just put my brisket sandwich on my drone and I could just fly it home.
Now do you do the sliced brisket or the chop?
There's another sandwich at Buc-ee's. Didn't I make you eat it? That other one that had like the bacon and
the club, I think. That was really good.
The club. That's actually the like underrated good sandwich at Buc-ee's. But if you're like a first timer, it's strong, it's hefty. But if you're a first timer and you go to Buc-ee's, you're probably going to get brisket, just the way it is. But sliced brisket is my way.
I did for breakfast before we went down to the first drift event, it was like a chopped brisket breast. Brisket breakfast taco. That's really difficult to say, but that was pretty strong as well. I liked that quite a bit. Moving outside of gas station food. Go ahead. Hold on. What were you about to say? Is there another hidden gem at the Buc-ee's?
Oh, dude. No, oh, yeah. We could do a whole podcast about Buc-ee's. We can move
absolutely
on.
Okay. Yeah, we can. Well, moving outside of gas station food, can you tell everybody that might not be familiar with you, how did you get started with Walther and what exactly is the bridge between drifting and firearms in your experience?
Well, I'll take it back a little bit further than that and kind of how I got my start into like carrying and kind of being my own first responder. And that's when I lived in Florida. I lived out in the middle of nowhere. There was nobody around and my daughter had just been born. So that would have been 2018. I'd been around guns my whole life, but this was like me taking the initiative to start being my family's protector. And I bought a gun thinking, okay, I did it. I got the gun. We're good. Like, I've got this. And I went out to the backyard and I set up a little target, probably 5 yards, maybe even closer, and I couldn't hit it. And I thought, there's something wrong with this gun. What's going on? This gun's a piece of crap. It's not me. It can't be me. And I just realized I was useless. I realized that me owning a gun didn't matter if I didn't know what I was doing. And I think what a lot of new gun owners today are doing is you go to YouTube and you hope that you are not getting bad information, because there's a ton of bad information out there.
Oh, yeah.
And it's your job to weed through that and find people that are reputable and that are going to give you good information and help you through the internet, you know, with proper fundamentals when it comes to training. And I just went hard. I just started buying ammo and shooting, and I was actively drifting and had a race program at the time. And back then I thought, you know, why is there no firearms companies in motorsports? It makes no sense. Every single person in the paddock or on Instagram is reaching out to me about my shooting content. So I was posting my growth as a shooter, and people were reaching out and putting in their two cents or whatever. But everybody, I mean, some of the top drivers all the way down to just, you know, fans on Instagram. And at that time, I didn't really know how to pitch it. I wasn't as grown as I am now. I didn't have any idea on how to start the conversation or get somebody in the industry involved with drifting. Fast forward from 2018 to 2023, I knew that I was coming back to drifting. We were building a new program, a new car. And I knew that whoever was going to be on the door of my car was not going to be an automotive company. I wanted somebody outside of automotive. And where I'm so passionate about guns and specifically training with guns, not just guns. I'm not really a gun guy, right? I don't own a ton of guns. I'm really adamant about training and being proficient with whatever gun you have, whether you have one or 10, you know, you should be good with your gun. So,
sure.
Big advocate for training, and I wanted a company that would also back that, you know, a company who was had a professional shooting team, a company who cared about the people and not just mill contracts and law enforcement, somebody who really catered to and understood the Second Amendment. And I talked with Amy 556 on Instagram. We've been internet friends.
Yeah, I love Amy.
We've been internet friends for a long time, and she's kind of always been there through me learning to shoot and giving me pointers and just been a friendly person in general.
Absolutely.
And I reached out with those exact questions. You know, who do you think would represent both motorsports and the gun community on the civilian side? And she gave me a couple names when she said specifically, she said, I know a guy at Walther. His name's Chris. You need to call him. He's the guy you should call. And I cold called you.
And here we are.
We had a conversation. We had a conversation that went good. I remember exactly where I was at. I was in Lexington, Kentucky. I was going to a job, and I pulled over in some industrial park to have a call with you. You know, I didn't have a deck made or a proposal done yet, and we just had a conversation. And at first, I was a little nervous, and as it rolled through our 20, 30-minute call, it just became natural. We both had an understanding of what we wanted to achieve, and then it was, okay, well, let's do it. You know, how do we start this? And then just... my car wasn't even done yet.
And has it not been shockingly easy? I mean, there's been bumps and stuff along the way, but like the overlap that we kind of projected on that first phone call between the motorsports fans and the gun fans was so apparent at even just the first two events that we've done so far. I'll wear a Walther shirt around the pit area and have people stop me and be like, oh, you guys have a car now. It's cool. You know, so it really has been something awesome. I don't feel like we could have hit the nail on the head any harder than what we have. So we're really pumped about it.
I think that also, like, I knew there, you know, there's times when you do things where you're confident, but you're skeptical, and you cross your fingers and you hope they work. You know, and we all do that throughout our lives, whether it's a job or whatever, some endeavor. With this, I was so confident, and at no point was I like, oh, the gun guys aren't going to like drift cars, or the drift guys aren't going to like guns. It's been, 100% positive feedback from my community on the drift side, and then my firearms community, you know, that are on my Instagram page and seeing the Walther fans kind of come in and embrace what we're doing. It just, it feels good. And I'm,
it does.
Anybody that's watching this, that's kind of reached out and embraced what we're doing, I appreciate you all. It's been a great experience, and we're just getting started.
Yeah. Really just getting started. What are our next ones? We've got GridLife as the event that's going to be up in Michigan, GridLife Midwest, which is a Gingerman Raceway is the next event we'll be at.
Gingerman
we can get
Raceway.
Into like where, yeah. We can plug all of the upcoming events at the end, but I know that's the one that's going to be next, and we're going to try and have a larger presence there at that event as well. So, how is it that you got started in BMX riding?
So when I was 5 and 6, I lived in Montana, and my neighbor raced BMX at the racetrack, and I did that with him for a little bit. And I did good at racing, and my dad passed away, and my mom moved me, just me and her. We moved to Oregon, and I didn't know anybody. There wasn't really any racetracks, but there were some kids that run BMX, but like at a skate park, and I didn't know what that was. I didn't understand it, but I would just start going to the skate park with my race bike and trying to jump and do things. And I was in a very good location at the time for BMX. BMX was growing, and Portland 20 years ago was a much different place than it is now, let me say. It was a very safe and welcoming, clean, beautiful city. I mean, I can't express how awesome it was to grow up in Portland in the like late 90s, early 2000s, and it's changed a lot. I just happened to be around the right people, and like at 14, I think 8th grade, I got sponsored. So I was going to school sponsored, and like having to be pulled out of school to go to like other countries to go ride BMX. Mm-hmm. And like the school calling my mom and being like, hey, you know, like he's got to do his work on the road, or he can't miss any more school. Or, you know, it was just kind of that. And I was traveling all over the world with my bike, filming and experiencing life at a young age. And then I did that all the way until I was 25, like full-time. That's where I did for a living. You know, I lived in LA. I was a team manager for a BMX company. I managed the team and organized trips and wrote checks for riders. I did, you know, I had signature products with my name on them that we sold. And it was a cool experience. And I think I learned a lot from that. It helped roll over into like actual adulthood, because being a pro BMX rider is not about it. It's adult. You're like, you're around a bunch of degenerates, and you're traveling, and it's not real life.
So how did you blend that then? I know you had talked to me a little bit personally about drifting attracts a lot of kind of extreme sports guys. How did that happen for you?
Well, as we know, like conventional sports like football, baseball, and stuff, there's structure to that. It's a team, there's a coach, and there's discipline. There's really one way to do it, right, with conventional sports. You got to put the ball in this net, and that's how it works. Now, with BMX, it's called freestyle BMX because it's whatever you want it to be. The way that you do a trick is completely different than how so-and-so does a trick, and that is what makes your riding unique, and it's freestyle. And drifting, for the people that don't really know much about it, it's very, very similar. It's a motorsport that you're not racing to be first across the finish line. It's a judge sport on the competitive side. And on the grassroots side, it's just a demonstration of your own style, whether that be how you drive the car or how you style the car with the colors and the livery and the stickers. And there's more personality into it. So typically you'll see conventional sports people go into racing like NASCAR or circle track. And you'll see action sports athletes, skateboarding, BMX, snowboarding, go to a sport more like drifting.
Yeah.
As we know, like X Games, everybody knows what X Games is. All of those disciplines in X Games, skateboarding, BMX, motocross, all of them are judged. That's how you win. Whoever has the most points from their run wins. And that's the same as drifting.
So it's like a mentality. Got you.
The basic fundamentals of action sports and drifting are the same. one.
Can you kind of break down for the listener that might not really be aware, because I wasn't even fully aware until I actually got there and watched it. They might have seen the car on Instagram sliding around or whatever. What exactly is drifting? You touched on it there a little bit in your last answer, but can you kind of really dive down the nuts and bolts of what it is, and why it's not, you know, why it isn't drag racing, why it isn't time attack?
There's levels to it for sure. As we all know, whenever it snows and you slide your car around and you get that little hit of adrenaline and how fun it is, we always explain drifting as the most fun thing you could do in a vehicle, because you're mixing a lot of these other disciplines of motorsports and putting them into a package that has a ton of grit in the car, like a drag race car or a road race car, but enough power to keep the wheels spinning, but enough grip to make the car go where you want it to go, right? So, yes, the car is just sliding around, but it's a lot more violent than you would experience maybe doing donuts in your truck in a parking lot full of snow, or putting trays on your Honda Civic's rear wheels and holding the handbrake up and driving around in circles. Yeah. So it's a lot more violent. It's probably the worst thing you could do to a car. It puts the car through a ton of stress. These cars are built to a very high level. It's expensive to do it. Other motorsports are more expensive when you talk about racing, but you're trying to get around a track and put the car in specific locations that help the track flow smoothly and allow a tandem driver. When we talk about tandem, that's two cars. You have a lead car and a chase car that's going to follow the lead car. So the lead car needs to follow a line. It's wide, so the chase car can get close and put on a show. Or, they say you can't have a good chase without a good lead. So, there's specific places on the track that the car needs to be in for it to flow right.
So it's very much like a skill exhibition, as opposed to this is how fast my car goes in a straight line, or it's a stylistic exhibition that's very loud.
It's very
to watch.
It's very much stylistic, and in competition, like at a pro level, we have Formula Drift. If you've never heard of it, maybe give it a YouTube search, but that is a competition. It is judged, but it's judged between two runs. So you have a lead. Everybody gets a lead, and everybody gets a chase. So if that guy that's leading has 500 more horsepower and more grip than the guy behind him and just smokes him around the track and the guy's way back here, well, that guy's going to lose. So there is aspects of performance that are really important as far as drive, grip, steering angle, horsepower. All those things in competition are important, just like in any race, racing division. But it's on a grassroots level, like what we're doing, which is an exhibition level, if you want to go back to that. You're just trying to have a reliable car that can put on a good show for the spectator. For the guy getting a ride along, you know, at our events, we do ride alongs. That's something to take notes of, guys. If you ever come out to our event, you can go for a ride.
Yeah, I got to go on, it was really the first official ride along, and I was not prepared for what that was going to feel like. I've been in fast cars like my whole life. I've had some buddies, and I've had some cars that would go really fast in a straight line, but so I know what it feels like to get pinned to the back of your seat. I was not prepared to get pinned to the back of my seat, pinned to the right of the seat, the left of the seat, all while being inches away. It felt like a perpetual car crash. Like if you've ever been in a car crash and your brain like kind of slows everything down, you get a ton of adrenaline. It was like a very loud, chaotic version of that. And yet you were in control the entire time. Like we would slide around one corner and I would fly to one side of the car, even though I'm in a 5-point harness. And racing seat and stuff, 6-point harness, excuse me.
Oh.
In a special design racing seat. So like it's holding you still, but I could have reached out and touched a car that was also sliding what appears, you know, to the untrained eye would be out of control right next to you. It was super loud because you've got, you know, an LS, very, very built LS motor in the car that we have. And, It was awesome. And that is going to be something we'll talk about it a little later, I'm sure, the giveaway ride-alongs to those certain people, specific people, maybe as like a contest or something like that, a wrap. We haven't quite decided yet.
Oh, that's so sick.
Yeah, we'd love to be able to give some Walther fans some ride-alongs in the Walther car. Yeah,
yes.
Tons of fun.
I'm a huge advocate for all it takes to get into drifting is one ride-along.
Yeah.
One ride-along, because you can watch drifting. You can look at our Instagram content, and they're like, that's cool. Car looks good. Mm-hmm. It's sliding around. That's awesome. Then being there and seeing it in person, that's a little bit better because now you're getting the real raw noise in drifting, which is very, very loud. And I think that's something that people wouldn't expect either. It's very loud. And then you get in the car. And the minute you get a ride along, you're hooked. And that was how it went for me. That's how it's gone for 90% of the field is it started with a ride along.
Yeah.
And then you're out.
So once you're hooked, let's say that we'll start there. Once you're hooked, what would you say? Let's do this in two different ways. What would be the cheapest way for somebody to get into drifting? And then what would be the best bang for the buck way to get into drifting? Because I feel like those are two separate things.
Well, if you get the ride along, you get the bug. Around the country, there's a lot of great people that have drift schools. I taught at one for a year with Chelsea Denofa. It was called the School of Drift. He owned it. And we had six or seven school cars. And for about $1,500, you could come out for a few hours and learn how to drift. It was an arrive and drive program. You could fly into Portland. You could get a rental car, come to the track, and everything was ready for you. Tires, fuel, helmet, car, everything was ready. And you could experience what it's like to learn to drift in a day at a track. And 90% of the time, our students would start with maybe barely knowing how to drive a manual car to linking corners by the end of the day. And then with that knowledge and skill set, that base level skill set, you do what you want with it. Maybe they go, hey, this was too much. It was too hard. This is it for me. They got to try it without investing a ton of money into their own program, building their own car or buying a truck and trailer. They got to try it. So I would recommend anybody go to one of these drift schools. You can reach out to me on Instagram, and I can put you in contact with some great people that have programs on the West Coast, down in Texas, up in New Jersey, Florida, wherever you're at, the closest place. I can get you in contact with somebody that's reputable, that will take care of you. It's safe, affordable, and it covers all the boxes. So that's what I would suggest to do first, no matter what. Okay. If you are thinking about best bang for your buck or the cheapest way, do that first.
Okay.
And then let's just say you went and you loved it. Now you're all in. And you work a 9-to-5. Maybe you have a family, children, a wife, and you don't have a lot of extra money because everything's expensive right now. I would recommend finding the closest drift organization to you. I would never recommend learning on the streets or in a parking lot. That stuff is dangerous and it's not worth it. So find a track that's close to you, maybe one that's, driving distance, and buy a car that is street drivable that you can also drift. So something like a C5 Corvette, mm-hmm. you can get one of those for about 12 grand, 10 grand. And out of the box, that's a pretty decent car. You could get a BMW 330. That's a little bit cheaper, $7,000 to $8,000. And then there's the perishables, tires. Tires the less horsepower you have, the longer your tire is going to last. So that's something to keep in mind, the perishables and the consumables with drifting are a lot higher than other motorsports.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be cheap to get into it by buying a car at a good deal, but the things that you have to do to maintain and keep going drifting are kind of what gets you in the long run. So truck and trailer on the higher end, the best bang for your buck. You get an open deck trailer. You get a truck that's your daily driver and your tow rig, so you're not insuring and having to take on two car payments or buying two cars, whatever. Get a truck mm-hmm. that's your daily and can also tow your car. and find a friend who also wants to go to the track with you that can help you, you know, unload and change tires and go for rides. You can share the car. Maybe you have a friend who's also interested and you guys go in on a car together. I know a ton of people who have done that. Guys who have done a three-way buy-in on a vehicle and everybody pitched $2,000 and now they have a vehicle they can go beat the heck out of. And, you know, they all work on it together and contribute to that car and they all have fun together. So that's another option. There's a lot of organizations in the United States that have drifting. I mean, pretty much everywhere in the country, you know, Oklahoma, there's a great organization. California, there's 3 or 4. Oregon, there's not much. Seattle, there's a good organization. Ohio, Indiana, Kentucky. I mean, they're everywhere. So it doesn't matter where you live in the United States. There's probably an event close by. And any questions about this stuff, feel free to DM me on Instagram. I want to see drifting grow just as much as I want to see more firearms and, you know, in the waistband or the homes of Americans. So any questions, feel free to reach out.
Awesome. I thought it was cool. You mentioned the Corvette too. I was really interested in seeing, as a car guy myself, when people hear drift, they're going to think of one of two things. It's either going to be Need for Speed. They played it on Need for Speed, or they saw it in Tokyo Drift, the movie. So I went expecting to see a lot of, like, you know, cool import cars, especially from 90s, maybe early 2000s import cars. But there were tons of, you know, Mustangs and Corvettes and other domestic cars as well doing this, which was pretty cool. Yeah.
So that's very true. In the early 2000s, you would have went to a drift event and there only would have been 240SXs, RX-7s, and that or maybe a Corolla, an 8086 Corolla.
Mm-hmm.
Those would have been the only cars you saw because they were like, you could buy them for like $500.
Yeah.
And then
it's exciting, honestly, too, seeing the sunset on the importation restrictions are now letting even more cool cars from that era flood in, which is awesome. Skylines and things like that we haven't even got to see before really in this country.
Yeah, but do you want to go drift one of those and crash it into your buddies?
Absolutely.
Right? But it makes more sense now to go out and buy a C5 Corvette for $10,000 and then park your R34 Skyline in the garage. You know, the domestic stuff, I don't know why it took so long to catch on. I really don't know why, because Corvettes, in theory, are one of the best drift cars that you could get. And they've been pretty affordable for a long time. Like, they're actually more expensive now than they were 5 years ago, like a C6.
Mm.
They're going up in price now. Same with BMWs. BMWs are going, they were $500 for an E46, and now they're climbing back up. So we see this happen on the domestic market and the JDM market as time goes on. As we get older, the cars get older and they get harder to get.
That was cool, too. Speaking of ride-alongs, shout out to our buddy Devin, who is also a firearms enthusiast that does drift stuff as well. He has an IS-300 that's a four-door that he was talking about building up so that he could have then more people in the car to do ride-alongs in an IS-300, which was, I thought, awesome. Super cool idea.
Oh, four seats.
Four seats, yeah.
Yeah, like a drift taxi is what they call it.
Is that something that's been done before, or is he the first one to do that?
No. There's guys that have 1,000 horsepower, 4-seat cars.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's been happening.
He had mentioned as well welding the differential. Is that something that would be necessary, or is that
on
just
an idea? Yeah, so circling back, let's say you buy a BMW 330 CI. You've got the car, you're going to drive it to the track, and you're going to drift, and then you're going to drive it home. The first three modifications to any drift car right off the bat is going to be a locking differential. So the cheapest way to do that is to weld it and then refill it with fluid. It doesn't sound good. It's clunky, but it works, and it's cheap. You can have somebody weld a diff for about $100. So you're going to weld your differential, you're going to get a set of BC coilovers, and you're going to get a seat, a bucket seat to hold you in place. Because the more you can feel what the car is doing, the better or the easier it's going to be to learn. And if you're sliding around in a stock seat, in a leather seat, and it's throwing you side to side, you're never going to be able to feel the car. So I always recommend a seat, coilovers, and a welded diff. Those are your first three modifications. And that will cost you under $2,000 in mods. And that will get you drifting. I mean, and then from there, you put a hydraulic handbrake in, or you get some steering angle. But diff, shocks, seat.
How do you think drifting has evolved just since you've been kind of on the scene?
It's gotten more expensive.
Sure.
And I don't mean that like inflation. I'm not just talking about that. I mean the quality and the scale and the builds has gotten a lot bigger, right? Because now, to go drifting at, let's say, Grid Life, which is an exhibition event. It's not a competition. But if you want to be able to keep up and hold pace with the rest of the drivers, you have to have a car that can handle good, that's safe, and makes, you know, decent power. And all those things combined, safety costs so much money in a race car. Like, it's such a necessary, right? Like a roll cage. To get a roll cage put in the car can cost close to $6,000. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Back in the day, you know, when I first started drifting, like 2008, you didn't have to have a roll cage to drift at any track. Because the cars didn't make any power. They were so slow. And there wasn't really much danger, I guess, on a racetrack to go drifting. And now cars are making 1,000 to 1,500 horsepower going 130 miles an hour sideways with nitrous and, you know, the radiators in the back of the car, and they're on big tires. It's just, it's evolved. The cars have evolved. It's like comparing when stock cars, NASCAR, they used to use stock cars right off the lot. And it evolved because NASCAR evolved because the cars evolved, which made it cost more money. Now, instead of buying a $5,000 Chevelle off the lot and going racing, now a NASCAR costs $1 million to build. And it's just a progression of the car. As the sport progresses, the cars progress, and it costs more money. That's what I've seen. So it's cost more money, and people know what it is. It's not uncommon.
What are your thoughts?
Talk about drifting.
What are your thoughts then? You know, probably the biggest, craziest example of it was the Hoonigan video where they had the electric, I believe it was an Audi. What are your thoughts on electric cars coming into drifting?
All of the cars that have come into drifting that are electric have been all-wheel drive. So technically it's not drifting. It's like power sliding. It's all four wheels are spinning. And there was a 1 year with a good friend of mine. His name's Travis Reeder. You'll meet him in Gingerman. He's coming out. I grew up with this kid. We started drifting together. And he got into Formula Drift, and a company out of Texas approached him. They had built a Camaro, like in one of the new Camaros, you know, the ones with the small windshields, with a Tesla power plant in it. So it was an electric Camaro that they wanted to run in Formula Drift. And they picked Travis to be the driver. And, you know, this was 2016, maybe 17, maybe. And it didn't work. The car drove, but it was not competitive. And, it's an on off switch. There's no clutch modulation. You know, if it makes 800 horsepower, it's immediately 800 horsepower. There's no power modulation in working the power band of the car. And that made it hard to drive. There's no noise, which is like half the reason we like drifting, right?
Yeah.
But there's no noise. It's just the tires screeching. And I think that takes away from the experience altogether. And I'm just not a big electric car guy. I know what it takes to make an electric car, and it defeats every purpose for having an electric car, right? The going green and having, you know, saving the environment and stuff. Most people don't know what it takes to build an electric car, and just kind of goes against everything that they're supposed to be against. So I don't know. It's not for me. I like a combustion engine. I like something that makes a lot of noise.
And our car definitely makes a lot of noise.
Yeah, it does.
Probably one of the best parts of the car. So then, speaking about the car, what are some? I'm so excited for this question. What are some hardships that you have faced while getting into drift?
This year,
you
can... or in general,
sure. Why don't you? Okay, I'm excited to split that then in two. Before this year, what were your biggest hardships in drifting? And then you can get into even just the last 60 days, if you'd like, hardships in drifting.
Okay. So coming from BMX to drifting, I didn't have a lot of money. I'd never had family that helped foot the bill for my hobbies when I was younger. This was 2016 to 18, when I was doing this all by myself. It was financially tough because I did it all by myself. I didn't have any help. I had some sponsor money, and I made it work, but I burnt myself out. You know, it was just, you lose a motor and you have to figure out how to get it back together. This was years ago, you know, and I didn't have the know-how to build a program. I didn't know what I was doing. So the prepping the car and working on the car and all that stuff, you can call that kind of a speed bump, or, you know, the difficulties of drifting, but that's just part of it. We accept that when you sign up to go drift, you are going to be in the shop working on a car regardless, right? Everything comes back to money. That's really the truth. Guys leave drifting not because they don't want to drift. Everybody wants to drift. They leave because they run out of money. Whether it's a family member pulling the plug on their program, or they just, you know, they got laid off from their job that is what paid for the program, or they lose a big sponsor, and then it's over. And they can't put the bill anymore. For me, it was YouTube. And let me tell you, this goes back to guns too. I had a YouTube channel that made good money every month. It paid for my racing. And I got into guns, and I started incorporating some of my gun stuff to my YouTube content. And within 2 months, I went from making six figures a year to projected making a quarter of that off of those 2 months. So those 2 months scaled me to show me what was going to happen. And I don't want to say I got shadow banned or whatever, but it didn't really make any sense because we were doing so well. And the minute the gun stuff got involved, that started to go away. So finances, if your money goes dry, drifting stops because it's expensive. Mm-hmm. And this year, the last 60 days, if you want to fast forward a few years, I worked really hard to get the Walther car done, wrapped, ready to roll by a certain date, so that we could test it before our first Grid Life event in April. So I got the car done. We dynoed it, made good power. Everything looked great. Chris came down to Bristol to join us for our first test day. Like he said, he went for the first ride along in the car. And the second person that got in the car was my wife's dad. And the motor catastrophically blew apart. The rods seized on the crank and then shot the rods down through the pan and catastrophically blew up our motor. And that was a cheap motor. It was an inconvenience, but it was something that we were concerned about when we put it in. It was not a very reputable builder, and it was a cheap motor. It doesn't matter. We wrote it off and we said, okay, well, we gotta get a new motor. So now we're scrambling because we have 2 weeks before our first event, or 3 weeks, 2.5 weeks, whatever. We're scrambling. We got to find a motor, one that we know won't blow up. And we find a motor. It's $13,000 and it's 7 hours away. So We drive out, we pay the money, we kick up the motor, we bring it home, we swap it into the car in 2 days, we go to the dyno, and it's leaking oil. So we come home, we fix that, we go back to the dyno, everything checks out, it makes good power, we're ready to go. We got a good motor now, and we plan a test day. And this test day is in Indiana. This is during the NRA event.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm going to go up to Indiana, and I'm going to test the car before we go to Gridline so that we know it's good before we go to our big event. And I load up the trailer. My wife and I are driving. My daughter, thank God, wasn't with us. We're driving along the freeway right outside of Frankfort, Kentucky, and our truck goes up in flames, a 2017 Ford F-250. Catches on fire, burns to the ground.
I'll post pictures. Like, I'll overlay those as we're talking about it so people can see.
So the truck, and when I say it burns to the ground, like it really burnt down. It didn't just kind of catch on fire. Our truck's total. And I own that truck outright, and Kentucky insurance is really expensive, so I had liability on my truck, and we just wrote off the money. Truck's gone. Money's gone. No, we're not getting anything. It's just gone. So now my heart hurts a little bit, and I'm still staying optimistic. And I mentioned earlier this that I never had any help earlier in my drifting days. You know, I did it all on my own, and it was difficult. Well, my uncle Mo has stepped up to kind of help me.
When things shout out to Uncle Mo. He's one of the real ones.
He's great, and it's never like, here's a ton of money, go have fun, don't worry about it. It's like, all right, here's some money, you're paying it back, but I'll take care of it. So our truck burned to the ground, and I don't finance stuff ever because debt is not good. And so we bought a new truck, and I'm not going to tell you how much a new truck costs, but if you go to the car lot, you can look.
It's a nice truck.
We got a diesel. It is a nice truck. We got a dually, and we haven't tested the car, but we got to go to Gridline. So we got to go to South Carolina. Chris has got to meet us there Friday in the evening. We get there Friday early, and the car's doing pretty good. We're out there testing, kind of fueling the car out, did a few laps, and then we had a problem where oil pressure, if you know anything about cars, oil pressure needs to go up as RPMs go up. And it was doing the opposite. As the RPMs went up, the oil pressure was kind of fading. It didn't kill the motor. It wasn't a catastrophic failure, but we drained the oil and we found aluminum in the oil pan, and we had to make a call. It was a tough call because we were there. That weekend cost me $5,000, just to put into perspective what drifting costs. Mm-hmm. And it probably actually cost more than that, but close to $5,000. And we had to make a call to shut it down and not drive the car. You know, we stayed there and activated out of our pit space and interacted with fans, and people bought merch, and we still had a great time. It was still a win.
Yeah, and you did get to drive a bit. I mean, it wasn't zero laps, so yeah.
Yeah, and we did have some content from the event. We had another one of my friends, a media guy, come down and help us with some secondary content. And the car came home, engine's out, the engine is off getting rebuilt right now. It's not something that we did, and it's not something that the engine builder did. What we found is that the oil pump housing was a bad casting. So it's just a cast piece of aluminum that sits inside the motor, and if it's machined improperly or the casting is done poorly, it can rub, and that friction on the aluminum will shave off little tiny pieces. And those will then get circulated through the entire motor, through the bearings, the lifters, the oil pan, all of our lines.
So what you're saying is that heat shavings of metal in your oil is bad?
Bad, yes.
That's not a good thing. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Metal, listening at home, if you have metal shavings in your oil, that's bad.
It is bad. So we're getting the motor rebuilt, and the engine builder, although it was not his fault, his name's Mike Lau Racing Engines, and he stepped up and got our motor. Our motor will be done technically tomorrow.
Awesome.
Already rebuilt.
I'll tell you what was cool about... Sorry, go ahead. No, continue.
I was just going to say, and the motor that we're going to be getting back is going to be much more spicy with probably another 100 horsepower.
Awesome. Well, that'll be
Yeah,
cool.
but go ahead.
What was really cool to me too about, even going back to Bristol, the first event, and it really looked like, if I still have the picture on my phone, or maybe you still have it all overlay here too, but it really looked like somebody just shot a 50 cal through your oil pan, and it was just connecting rod, right? Piston and rod, and just
So
fired right through the bottom of your.
yeah,
But the cool thing to
I've got
me
hipsters.
was, you mentioned it kind of in passing, like, oh, we found another motor, but it was really cool to me. I was in the truck as we were driving back from Bristol to your place there in Kentucky, and you didn't just find another motor. Like the entire, you called everyone. Like the entire drive was just chain phone calls, trying to find another motor. And it was cool hearing everybody really kind of the sense of community, having everybody that was talking to you trying to help in any way that they could, was very cool to see. It was reminiscent to me. I shoot photos and video at a lot of the USPSA events and competition shooting events. And like at those events, if somebody's battery in their optic dies, or if their optic dies, or if they have parts failures or something like that, even amongst fellow competitors who would be trying to beat that person in a competition, or just want to do better than them, everybody kind of comes out of the woodwork to help. And there's a sense of community and a sense of camaraderie there that I thought was a cool overlap to see between the motorsports community and the shooting community. It really does seem like a tight-knit group of people that they really just love the sport and want people to do better in it, whether that's their competitors or not.
I'm glad you brought that up because that's not normal in racing. Racing is a very competitive place. In most disciplines, road racing, time attack, NASCAR, you would never share parts, data, information, or really any words at all with any other team, period, because they are your competitor. Drifting, even on the highest level, at Formula Drifts level, you will see guys borrowing parts from other teams to make sure they can make it on track. So it's cool that you notice that because I don't think a lot of people do. On a
Why is it
grassroots level,
different?
obviously.
Like, why
In
would
other
time
motorsports?
attack folks be, why would they not, and drift would, in your opinion?
I think that it all comes back to the competitiveness of conventional sport style, right? Those racers are very much there to be the first across the finish line, right? There is no stylistic aspect to time attack. It is what works, how are we going to be faster, and that's it. You cannot drive a race car, a grip race car, around a road race track and really have more style than the next guy. There is a line, and this line is the only way you can go to be fast. And if you screw that up, you're just slower. You don't look better doing it, right? You're not going to get extra points. Now, drifting, you may be a little bit slower around the track, but man, you have full angle. The car is backwards. That's cool. Do you see what I'm saying? I think that rolls over to the personality side of the paddock too. There's a lot more on the line for these bigger motorsports. I think egos are a lot bigger in these other motorsports. Money is a lot bigger in these other motorsports. There's a lot more money on the line. Data on your race car and how the car's getting from point A to point B faster is super, it's recorded, right? You do not want anybody to get that. You don't want them to know what spring rates you're running, what shocks you're running. It's very closed off. And drifting, we all it is smaller, so we all want to see it grow. And I'm not saying that drifting will never get to the point that we're talking about with these other motorsports, but it's so small that we all understand the agenda of drifting, which is to grow it. So if I'm in a competition and Travis Reeder's car over here needs an axle, and my car has the same axle, and if I don't give him that axle, he doesn't run, which makes the show for the fans crappier. We all have to think like that. We have to think about the bigger picture.
One of
And
the
just
coolest
wanting.
things too was when at this last event when we were having oil pressure problems, some guys came over and they were like, well, they were wearing T-Pain shirts.
Yeah.
Was my reaction as well.
Sorry.
It's like, yeah, T-Pain, the T-Pain. There's only one, I'm sure. There's only one T-Pain, but he has a drift team, motorsports team.
That's it.
And they came over and helped.
Yeah. I was with T-Pain a couple weeks ago filming a video with him. You met the president of his motorsports company. His name was Hurt. You remember him?
Yeah. Yep.
So Hurt, yeah, that was a longtime friend of
mine. It's all kinds of people in drifting.
Yeah, T-Pain loves drifting. And he's good.
Is he?
Yeah, he's good at it. Yeah.
That's good to hear.
He's good. He gives back to the community. He hosts events. And if you go to event in Atlanta, and you can literally go drifting with T-Pain. Like, that's crazy. That's
super cool. That is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, who are some of your, the people that you've looked up to in drifting? Like, who kind of mentored you through drifting?
I would say that Travis Reeder, I've mentioned that name a couple times, but Travis, we started drifting together at the same time. He's very smart, articulate, and he's gone really far in the sport, and he's helped me on the driving and the setup aspect, and I kind of helped him on how to build a brand within himself and his name. And I think him and I both kind of pull from each other and grow off of each other, which has always been super helpful. I mean, literally our whole lives since we were like 17 or something. So that's one person that I really appreciate and still look up to. Chelsea.
Mm-hmm.
Chelsea Denofa. You met him in South Carolina. He's a good awesome friend guy of mine. We've gone back a long time and he's achieved things that, they're insane. I mean, he's Formula Drift champion, helped build RTR, which is Ready to Rock. It's a off-brand of Ford with Vaughn, building their Mustang program. He built a Porsche to go drifting. He's a very accomplished driver. Used to ride BMX.
I didn't know that. Good.
Yeah, he's a most guys used. Yeah, most of the guys are. So yeah, I look up to him a lot, Travis, and those are probably my biggest inspirations. Those two, but I respect everybody. I mean, everybody that does it, that puts in the work, that helps represent the sport and grow the sport, I got respect for. I look up to in some way,
Yeah. Well, why don't you let us know what are the next several events? I mean, I know you have most of a schedule already built out, but, one of the things that I know that you and I have talked about too is we do want to make this something where there's an overlap, obviously, between motorsports people and gun people, because guys that are into cool stuff are into cool stuff, and guns are cool and cars are always cool, always have been cool. One of the things that we do want to do, we're working on, we kind of have to work with some of the event sponsors and things like that. We want to start being able to like give away PDPs, which again, kind of goes back to why this podcast is important. You've dealt with it yourself. Anytime we talk about guns, gun giveaways, 30-day money back guarantee, any of that stuff, it can be met with resistance by people who just otherwise don't want to be involved. But the podcast allows us to really talk about whatever we want, whatever Walther's doing, especially as that benefits the customer and the consumer. But one thing that we do want to do at some of these events is we'd love to start giving away PDPs on like a raffle kind of basis. Show up, sign up, and then somebody at that event or several people at that event will win PDPs. We do want to give away ride-alongs in the car. It is an experience. It's not even like a roller coaster. It's not even close.
You can't even
explain like a roller coaster. You really can't. It's a controlled car crash for a very extended amount of time. With a car that you
it's
would.
So hard to explain.
Yeah, it's a high power car crash constantly happening. It's so much fun. But we're wanting to do a lot more activation stuff. We want to be able to hand out, stickers. Caleb has some awesome shirts that he has for sale. Cool stickers and stuff. And we're working on all of that type of thing too, because we do want to build this program up, and people have already come out. The last Grid Life event was, from my understanding, one of the smaller Grid Life events, and there were people flocked around our car and flocked around the tent. And like I said, stopping, I was just wearing a normal Walther shirt, which I do every day of my life, But yeah, people grabbing me and stopping me and telling me how cool it was that a firearms company finally kind of realized the potential to get into stuff like this, and that they just thought it was cool. We were doing cool stuff, which we're Walther. Of course, we're going to do cool stuff. We love cool stuff. But what are the next several events that we're going to have a car at where people can come check that out?
I got it wrong here. So on the bigger side, we have Grid Life Festival Tours. You can follow Grid Life Official on Instagram to kind of keep track of the schedule, but I'll just kind of name it off to you guys here. We've got Gingerman Raceway in Michigan. That's June 7th through the 9th. And that's in southern Michigan. July 26th through the 28th, we're going to be at Road America in Wisconsin. August 16th and 18th, we'll be in Connecticut at Line Rock. Probably won't get a PDP over there. And then September 27th through the 29th, we'll be at Laguna Seca in California. Might not get a PDP there either.
No, we could give away some stickers and some shirts and stuff, though.
But we will have some cool swag and whatnot. Now, something that I want to bring up on the podcast is, how do we give the people watching the opportunity to not only go for a ride in the race car, but maybe see the race car and go shooting with us?
That's something that, you know, obviously you and I have talked about as well, too. We do want to have some activation events at different ranges, some of our larger dealers. I can't mention any names right now because the plans aren't set in stone. But we do want to get kind of around the country. We'd love to get, obviously, as much eyeballs on the car as possible because it looks awesome. It's cool to even just be able to sit in it. And again, like we don't deal with people that aren't shooters. So Caleb would not be the driver of this car if he wasn't also a shooter himself. Just like, you know, Taylor Weldon, another member of the Walther Adventure Division, wouldn't be kind of like our soft goods expert guy if he wasn't also a shooter. So we do want to get, you know, I love getting out to those types of events, range demos and things like that. And Caleb will be there. Those will hopefully be popping up this year. You'll be able to get out, see the car, and sit in it. Yeah, meet Caleb and, you know, yeah, have access to a lot of cool Walther products. We do have new stuff coming this year. Can't really talk about that right now either, but a lot of cool stuff coming this year from us. But yeah, so keep your eye on our news as well as then, you know, Caleb's news. So Caleb, I guess that's kind of the last thing is, where can people go to find out more about you and Quanbeck Racing or even just your BMX stuff?
Yeah, so the BMX stuff is pretty, well, few and far between now. If you get a glimpse of that, it's a special day. And it does pop up once in a while. But you can follow me on Instagram. It's just at Caleb Quanbeck. Pretty simple. You can follow Walther Arms. We'll be doing some collaborative posts there and posting kind of some original content that you may not see on my personal page. And then YouTube is Caleb Quanbeck. We've been slacking a little bit on the YouTube videos. But let me tell you, it's only because of all of these hardships we've dealt with the past 60 days with the car. I'm a one-man band for the most part. So all of the content, we didn't even talk about it, but I own a production company too. And shoot.
Yeah, you produced the video of the car reveal.
Yeah, the car reveal video I made. I shoot videos for, I've shot videos with, for a ton of companies. Gun, car, Power Stop Brakes. Everybody knows who Power Stop Brakes is. Shot a ton of content for them. But regardless, I have to work on the car and film. So doing both of those at the same time is really difficult. And we hope that next year we can bring on somebody part-time or possibly full-time where they just hold the camera. And I'll do the editing. We need a camera guy. So we're going to work on that for next year. And then so you can subscribe now to YouTube, Caleb Quanbeck, and just wait for the notification for a new video.
Do you have a site or anything? I know you had mentioned at one point that you have like your stickers and your shirts for sale. Where can people go to pick those up?
So I'm behind this podcast right now and building a new website, but it's going to be in a little bit. So if somebody was really interested in getting, hold on a second. If somebody was interested in some stickers or a shirt, you can message me on Instagram. Just direct message me. We do have like stickers too. These are like chrome.
I like the gold.
Gold chrome.
Yeah,
me too. And then some like vintage white and black. But we have stickers and shirts currently. We're working on a new sticker with Chris right now. I wish we could show them that.
I placed the order. It's in. They'll be at the next.
Is it a secret? Is it a secret?
No. I mean, it's a cool shot of the car that's going to be kind of holographic, chrome looking. Yeah, there it is, right there. It's like a really cool illustration of the car. Obviously, the big Walther logo there on the side, and it's going to be all hologram, and it'll be really cool. Great toolbox sticker.
Exactly. We'll have a ton of free swag that we're going to be throwing out, stuff that you can purchase. But even if you show up as an empty wallet, you're leaving something from our pit space, no matter what, at any of the events. Those events that I named for Good Life are big events, but there are some smaller local events throughout the tri-state area, like Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, Ohio areas that we will be attending. So just keep an eye on my Instagram. I always make sure to let people know that I'm going to be there. So if you want to come out, you know, even to the smaller
ones. And I don't want to speak for you, but yeah, if it's a smaller one, like Caleb's a super approachable guy, go to one of the smaller events and I'm sure he'd be more than happy to talk cars with you and guns and
easier.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, cool, man. I'm proud to know you. I'm happy that we got this program going and I'm super excited about where it's headed. And looking forward to a great year. We will definitely have you back on the podcast at some point. I know we're also going to have some journal articles on the website, www.walterarms.com. They're going to kind of focus on concealed carry and cars and things like that Caleb's going to write for us. So keep an eye out for those. And we will see you in about a month on the next episode. So thank you guys so much. Caleb, thank you for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
No problem, man. Well, we will see you guys in about a month, like I said. I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Walther Radio. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. At Walther Arms, it's our duty to create the world's best performing firearms. It's your duty to be ready. Thanks again for listening.